Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, Kenneth Thompson joins me. He is the independent monitor of the consent decree between the city of Baltimore and the U.S. Department of Justice, which mandates sweeping police reform. So we'll talk about the progress of the consent decree tomorrow with Kenneth Thompson. Now, why does Baltimore City have a separate government from Baltimore County? Plenty of people think it would be make a lot more sense to combine those two jurisdictions. And of course, there are plenty of people who think that that's a terrible idea. It's an idea that has been bandied about for more than 70 years. During World War I, leaders in Baltimore City annexed part of both Baltimore and Anne Arundel counties, worried about land and power grabs at the state level. 30 years later, just after the Second World War, the city was prohibited from annexing any more land by statewide referendum. A new report by the Able Foundation is intended to revive the conversation about a consolidated regional government in the Baltimore metropolitan area. It's called Combining Forces, and it includes case studies of three examples of metropolitan consolidation that did go forward: Nashville, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Louisville, Kentucky. Jeff Wachter is the primary author of the ABLE report. He's a researcher who specializes in the development of American cities and suburbs. His previous work has included studies on the municipal expansion of Richmond, Virginia, and the suburbanization of ethnic communities in Metro Atlanta. He joins us from the studios of WGBH in Boston. Jeff, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom.
Klaus Philipson is an old friend of our program. He's an architect who writes and lectures widely about urban design, preservation, transportation. He is the author of Baltimore, Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City, and his commentaries on urban design appear frequently on his blog, Community Architect. Klaus Philipson's here in Studio A. Good to see you, sir.
Hello. Glad to join you.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to join our conversation, what do you think of the idea of merging Baltimore City with one of the contiguous counties, perhaps Baltimore County, maybe even Anne Arundel County? Midday phone number 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. And to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. So, Jeff Wachter, first of all, let's talk about the distinction between an annexation and a consolidation. They are not the same thing.
No, they're not. So, consolidation is when two distinct governments decide to merge together under one new entity, versus an annexation where you have one government that's taking over land, sometimes through referendum, sometimes just by decree, and incorporating that into the currently existing government.
And Klaus Philipson, you wrote about this idea that, as I mentioned, has been bandied about for a long time, about the possibility of the city, Baltimore City and Baltimore County, merging. Is there a trend? I mean, is Baltimore City an outlier in the fact that it is a separate jurisdiction from the other jurisdictions that surround it?
Well, in that it is not part of a county, it is an outlier. There is only St. Louis as another large city. There are a bunch of cities like this in Virginia, but they're small. So that is a very different situation. And of course, the expectation and why this in the past has never gone anywhere is that Baltimore City would make out like a bandit and Baltimore County would suffer. And there is a trend where the two jurisdictions have very similar problems now. And the media are full of the problems that Baltimore County currently has to balance the budget with the $80 million shortfall. So maybe it is really time to revisit the question of who benefits or what the benefits are for whom. And if it's not so lopsided after all, maybe then there are more friends to this matter.
Yeah, interesting that it was just always assumed that this would be a much better deal for the city than the county. But given the fiscal challenges that the county faces and some other challenges as well, perhaps it's a little more, they would enter into any serious negotiation in a more even-handed way.
I mean, the relationship between these two jurisdictions is kind of interesting for many reasons. But obviously, Baltimore County was thriving by Peter robbing Paul. And so the they got the mobile, upward mobile residents from the city, and they had lots of space to grow. And so this is this expansion growth model that is ultimately not sustainable. And that is a Ponzi scheme, as Strong Cities wrote once a series about that suburbanization of that kind is really not a sustainable model. And so now Baltimore County is getting to the point where they don't have all this extra land anymore, where the stuff is aging just like in the city, where the demographics are not where they pick all the raisins, but they have the same demographic profiles or similar now as the city has, which is now they are robbed by the adjacent jurisdictions like Howard County, Cecil County, Harford County, and Arundel County. So this Ponzi scheme of always moving out further is coming to a point where you have to look at this differently. And the city has a lot more experience in doing this. They haven't been able to grow since 1918. And so now,
in terms of its geographical limits.
Yeah, right. So that's why David Rusk wrote the book, Baltimore Unbound.
That was back in 1995.
So right, because it was
some years ago.
Based on this expansion model as the only way for a jurisdiction to be healthy. But Baltimore City has since learned how to deal with not being able to expand, and by dealing with infill and by dealing with repurposing of areas with also higher taxes, of course, to manage what they have with the shrinking population. That's something that the county still has to learn.
And Jeff Wachter, when you studied these three cities, some of which had merged somewhat recently, and another Nashville, for example, their track record with this is now 50 years old. In Indianapolis, it's a matter of 40 years after what they call Unigov. But in Louisville, Kentucky, it's a 10-year track record that you were able to study. You also write in the report that most consolidation efforts fail. I mean, this is generally speaking not a popular thing in places where it's been tried. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think part of it is definitely the major wave of attempts to consolidate occurred in the 60s and 70s at the time that Indianapolis and Nashville were going through with theirs. And you had a lot of racial resentments that was a key component to why people were leaving the cities in the first place. And it made the concept of merging back with the community you just left very unappealing. I think more recently there's just a lot of fear of higher taxes. It's okay, you're going to tax the county in order to pay for city services is generally the perception that people get. And then there's a kind of a lack of leadership. I think the cities that have been successful in their merger had the somewhat unique situations where the most prominent leaders in both the city and county were major advocates, and they worked together to develop a plan that would be beneficial to both parties. And when you have leadership on one side or the other that is really trying to dig in their heels and oppose consolidation, it makes a referendum possibility that much harder to get.
And Jeff, you looked at these three cities. The most recent report is Nashville. The other reports about Indianapolis and Louisville came out a few years earlier. They've now been sort of collated together in a box set. Broadly speaking, were these consolidations successful?
So based on the goals of those actors who tried to consolidate, I think they would argue yes. The primary goals were economic development, stabilizing population, and government efficiencies. And in each of those metrics, those communities were better off. There was stronger business development, stronger population growth when compared to other cities in their regions. However, each consolidation certainly came with some downsides as well, particularly surrounding African-American and other minority political influence. Part of the racial dynamics of suburbanization is very divided racially. And so you have the often stronger county coming in, absorbing the city, and it results in suburban interest really kind of it has resulted in suburban interest kind of taking over for the broader community. to the detriment of some inner city interests and African-American interests.
And there have been some cases, Klaus Philipson, where the African-American community was opposed to it because it would dissipate and in some ways attenuate their political power. What was the reaction that as this subject sort of, you know, bubbles up into the public consciousness every so often? In 1995, you mentioned David Rusk's book. When that came out, there was a reaction. And just about a year ago or so, in April of 2018, The Sun wrote an op-ed, saying that this is something that should be considered. How did people respond at those two moments?
Well, race plays hugely into the discussion. First off, why it is as it is. So the suburbs were often closed to African Americans to go to. They had restrictive covenants and exclusionary zoning, and they had inside the city blockbusting and redlining, and so all these terrible histories of racism are what makes the city and the counties the way they are today. And so those things that we are now grappling with, and you know, you have many broadcasts all the time, whether it's monuments or whether it's affirmative action or whatever you have, we are still not coming to terms with it. So a lot of the psychological reactions that you get, they are also based on race. So the white suburbs aren't that white anymore anyway. So this is one thing, but there are certainly people that are afraid of that the poor people from the city will come out. And then the African-American community in Baltimore City, which has about 66% population ratio, would have a smaller one if you have the larger jurisdiction. But, you know, in Louisville and their county, when they merged, they changed also the way how the representation was, and that is similar in Baltimore City and county. When you look at one representative in the Baltimore City Council, how many one city council member, how many people they represent, it is a much smaller group. There's a much more fine-grained representation than in the county where the districts are much, much larger. And what they did in Louisville is make the districts like they were in the city for the whole new jurisdiction. So essentially, the people got actually better representation afterwards than before.
It's interesting. In Baltimore County, which has many more people, it's 800,000 plus people in the county, they have a county council of 8 people. Here in Baltimore, we have about 600 or just north of 600, 610, 620,000 people. And we have a city council of 14 plus a city council president. Interesting. Klaus Philipson is an architect and a blogger. His latest book is called Baltimore Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City. Jeff Wachter joins us on the line from WGBH in Boston. He's the primary author of a new Able Foundation report called Combining Forces. We're talking about consolidating local jurisdictions, for example, Baltimore City and Baltimore County. To weigh in with your thoughts, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. You can also drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. Let's go to the phones to Frank in Mount Washington. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. Three quick points I'd like you to comment on. Let's set race aside for a moment, because that seems to suck all the oxygen out of the room. Three things. Number one, if there were to be a consolidation, would there be an opportunity for Harford County, for instance, to redraw its line at the northern edges of Baltimore County, where, in fact, it's much more rural? And when you get into laws about land use, et cetera, it would seem to me that those northern sections of Baltimore County would be better served under Harford County, and to the west, maybe Carroll County. Number two, policing in the city is fundamentally different than in the county. How in the world would you consolidate police departments, especially when Baltimore City is having such difficulties? And then number three, and finally, a lot of the move to the suburbs was not just based on race. A lot of people wanted more space to raise their families. And now that they're empty nesters, they tend to be moving back into the city. And suburban poverty is less well understood, documented, and dealt with than urban poverty. So that's one of those emerging issues down the line that would be impacted if there were such consolidations? If you could comment on those 3 points.
I appreciate the call, Frank. So Jeff Wachter, Nashville, for example, it was by no means a slam dunk. This thing failed a few times before it passed, and this is some 50 years ago. Taking one of Frank's points, the issue of criminal justice and policing, what have you found happened in places like Nashville, Louisville, and Indianapolis?
So I think what's interesting about really all three of these is that while they consolidated in one sense, it was also not a complete consolidation in every aspect. So both Louisville and Indianapolis actually did not combine their police forces at the time of merger. Both have since done so. Louisville's police combined just a couple of years after the rest of the consolidation occurred, and Indianapolis's police department didn't end up merging for decades. It's certainly the case that the different communities have different policing needs, and that's something that would need to be laid out pretty clearly in any plan, even a partial consolidation of those police forces, so they can take advantage of some of their specialty services, but maybe the regular day-to-day policing might remain separate. So there's a lot of different ways to approach this issue, so that each community is really. So each community's issues are dealt with correctly.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the possibilities of partial mergers and different models for mergers. It doesn't necessarily have to be, as Klaus Philipson has written, a full-blown merger. And then, of course, the possibility that could create a domino effect with other counties getting involved if two jurisdictions decide to merge. That's an interesting notion as well. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To tweet us, it's @MiddayWYPR. Our guests are Klaus Philipson and Jeff Wachner. We'll have more with these two very knowledgeable gentlemen when we come back from a break. But before we take that break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 41 people in the city of Baltimore have lost their lives to violence. Police last week identified two victims of homicides whose deaths were reported the week before last. Their names are Marianne Wellington, age 29, and Jonathan Johnson Claiborne, age 24. Last week, 8 people lost their lives to violence in our city. Police have released the identities of 4 of them. They are Santos Medrano, age 37. Justin Forney, age 27, Jason Hodge, age 38, and Darius Davenport. He was 20 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, we're discussing the concept of metropolitan consolidation, where two local jurisdictions combine some or all of their government functions. Could that ever happen in places like Baltimore City and Baltimore County? And if it did happen, would it be a nightmare or a triumph of common sense? Jeff Wachter is the primary author of a new Able Foundation report about metropolitan consolidation. It's called Combining Forces. Klaus Philipson is an architect and urban planner. His latest book is called Baltimore Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. So, Klaus Philipson, you say it doesn't have to be a full-blown merger. There are variations on this theme. What would a potential merger between Baltimore County and Baltimore City look like?
Yeah, I think before we sweat all these questions of details, you know, whether the northern rural part of Baltimore County should be then somewhere else and so on, it's worth stepping back a bit and say, okay, we have worldwide, globally, a trend towards cities. So we have these metropolitan areas that increasingly are competing with each other globally. Instead of nation states, where the nation states become more and more dysfunctional, it's the metropolitan areas where the vitality is and where sustainability concepts are, where climate change is addressed, where all kinds of things are addressed that nation states are less and less able to really properly address. In this sense, to be myopic and say that all the jurisdictional boundaries that we have by circumstance, you know, they are drawn with a ruler, they make no sense. There are lots and lots of things that are system questions, like transportation, water, air, crime. So you can name many of these, and some of them are already attacked regionally. So the water system in Baltimore City is for 100 years a regional system that Baltimore County and Baltimore City share. So there are many steps that one can take towards a more gradual collaboration. And we just had elections for the county executives in Baltimore County, as well as in Anne Arundel County and Howard County.
And there's three new guys in each of those jobs.
Right. Mr. Ball, Mr. Stuart Pittman, and Johnny Olszewski, they're all interested in more collaboration. The mayor is interested in collaboration. So the stars are aligned for doing more together. And, you know, there, when we talk about the police department, the Baltimore City Police Department has lots of trouble. And obviously, a lot of city residents wouldn't particularly look forward to having county policing tactics imported into the city. But the mere thought that these two jurisdictions could work together in policing, I mean, would open totally new perspectives mm-hmm. over what we currently have with the understaffing that we have in the city. Education. Baltimore City schools are, you know, for the most part, not wonderful, and many of them are undercrowded. So they are closing schools because there are not enough students. In the county, they are overcrowded. They work out of trailers. So there are many areas where you could imagine that more flexibility would make a lot more sense. Myron Orfield talked in the 90s, and still does, but he was here in the city and came here as a guest to speak about tax base sharing, which they do in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So far, still the only really large-scale model where they do this. But that all makes a lot of sense. We need to do what makes sense, not what instills fear and what is sort of bad for psychology. We need to really do what makes sense.
Of course, the tax bases in Anne Arundel, Howard, Baltimore County, and Baltimore City are vastly different. Baltimore County just a little bit above 1%, Howard County a little bit below 1%, Anne Arundel County just a little below as well. And then Baltimore City, more than almost 2.25%. So it's a very different can of worms.
But it is interesting to see when we study this, Mr. Wachter can talk about this more, in the cases where the cities consolidated with the county, they did not have an average tax base.
Yeah, so talk about that, Jeff Walker. I mean, first of all, talk about the taxes. What happened? Did they go up? Did they go down? Did they stay the same? What was the effect?
So in Indianapolis and Louisville, they stayed pretty stable for everyone involved. Nashville taxes went up significantly, but that was primarily because county taxes were very low and they had almost no services. So the level of service was raised tremendously along with their taxes, so that they weren't particularly upset about those extra taxes because they got something for them. But I think both in Louisville and in Nashville, they have what were called urban services districts. So essentially, the places that were more urbanized areas that had different demands of public services, garbage collection, sidewalks, things like that, that you expect in a city that you might not necessarily take for granted in the suburbs, could still be paid for out of higher taxes in the city. And so you could have two different layers of taxes in order to pay for the things that are most requested by the citizens. And Indianapolis has still to this day, I think, a few dozen different taxing bodies within the city. So depending on what services are actually provided to each community.
And Jeff Wachter, in terms of the increase in population that this would entail if jurisdictions were to merge, I mean, here in Baltimore City and Baltimore County, 620 plus 800,000, you know, gets you over well over a million, 1.5 million or something like that. Is there something inherently good about having a larger population base? Does it give you more clout on the statewide level or even the national level to just simply have a jurisdiction that's got more people in it?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a psychological advantage to being in that top 10 cities in the country list. One thing I heard from a couple of people when I was interviewing people in Louisville, when they merged, they became a large enough city that they showed up on the Weather Channel when you look at the national map. And that was a big deal for people trying to attract companies to come in, attracting talent to come work in Louisville. So there's definitely a benefit to simply being bigger. It kind of makes, I think there's, it also works the same way with sports teams, right? So you become a major league city when you bring in a major sports team. So it's the same sort of concept. Okay. And that it makes you on lists of appealing places for business relocations and things like that.
Yeah, when I lived in Boston, it was the Boston Patriots, of course, and now they're the New England Patriots. But that had more to do with the team rather than the jurisdictions.
There's certainly efficiencies that you can have when you don't duplicate all the administrations.
Mm-hmm. Although, Jeff Wachter, you wrote about that. It wasn't always the case that the cost of government went down, was it?
No, but it also didn't necessarily blow up. I think there were different governmental organizations that did see more efficiencies. But as far as the amount of street lamps that you're going to need, the geography is the same, so you're not going to necessarily save there. But you will find savings in joint purchasing, in some of the heavier equipment that might be needed that you only use at certain times, and more sharing in that regard. There was a lot of, I believe it was in Louisville, where they found some savings by removing duplicative upper management. You don't need so many people to run the same program simply because the program is bigger. So there are definitely savings to be had by merging government functions.
We have an email from a listener, Matthew, who says maybe instead of merging Baltimore County and Baltimore City, the county could consider changing its charter to allow for the incorporation of its legacy towns and villages, places like Towson, Catonsville, Essex, Dundalk, etc. In the county, under our current system of governance, we can't even get sidewalks built on major roads in our densely populated areas, or have the power to cut localized deals to attract businesses. The county is managed on a sprawl model, generically from 40,000 feet, and merging the two would probably make it worse for Baltimore County residents, and that's not even diving into the schools and police priority issue. But is there a way, Klaus Philipson, of picking and choosing the things that there is some cooperation? There is a thing called the Metropolitan Council, right? And they putatively look at this.
Matthew's
regularly.
Mail goes to the fine-grained representation. And so when everything is in Towson, when you are actually in Catonsville or in Essex or so, then you don't always feel properly represented. If you had smaller council districts, and, you know, then there are other ways than doing incorporation, which most people in the county wouldn't want to do because they're glad they're not fragmented. Just two examples of where collaboration is. Take the incinerator, where we just voted in the city to have a Clean Air Act that probably will close the incinerator. The county is vastly affected by this as well. The county is sending about half the trash that goes to the incinerator to it, and the other half comes from the city. But they had no say in the decision making. And so there are examples like this, many of those, that where we are already collaborating and where we need to collaborate. Our transit system, you know, if we wanted to have a local transit system and not the MTA run it, for example, we would be much better off if city and county together would run the show.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. We have to leave it there. But Klaus Philipson, Jeff Wachter, thank you both. I appreciate the input and the perspective.
Thanks for having
us.
Klaus Philipson is an architect who writes and lectures about design, preservation, transportation, architecture. He is the author of Baltimore, Reinventing an Industrial Legacy City, and he blogs at Community Architect. Jeff Wachter is the primary author of a new ABLE Foundation report. It's called Combining Forces, an ABLE Inquiry into Three Local Government Consolidations and Their Results. We'll have a link to it on our website, wypr.org/ midday. That's it for us today. Joining me tomorrow, Kenneth Thompson, the independent monitor of the consent decree between the city and the Department of Justice. He'll join me to discuss progress with police reform on midday tomorrow. We want to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate you listening. Have a great day.